Chapter the Seventh. Canis Domini. The Six Hive transit system welcomes you to Cielo de Pájaros. Visitors are required to adhere to a minimum of humanist law while in this zone. Since our records indicate that this is considerably more restrictive than your customary law code, it is recommended that you review a list of local regulations not included in your code by selecting Law. Dominic Seneschal stepped from the car as if dismounting an unworthy horse. He did not ring the bell, but struck the front door with a practiced fist. How will those inside interpret this creature? His suit is neither Mason nor Mitsubishi. He wears no utopian coat, no cousin's loose wrap, no brillist sweater. His boots have no personalized design as a humanist's would, but are generic, high and black, as one might find on a museum dummy. The plastic coachman waiting on his plastic queen. His clothes are European, but too European to be the hive marker, not tidbits of fashion like a cravat or double-breasted vest combined with common clothes, but true period costume. Tight hose and breeches, showing off the thigh and calf, a tricorn hat, silk waistcoat, which has squandered countless human hours on hand embroidery, a coat short at the front to display the curves of hip and pelvis, but with ample skirting hanging in the back, down to the knee, pleated and full enough to drape dramatically over the horse he should be riding. The outfit is all black. Black embroidery on black cuffs and waistcoat blurring into shadow. His dark brown ponytail is curled too perfectly, like a wig, tied in the back with a crisp black ribbon. This stranger would seem at home at Versailles, or with the Jacobins, scheming revolution in their basements. But nothing anchors him to our society except for the tracker at his ear, and the black, hiveless sash which swishes lush around his hips, its warning stark as a poison label. Here stands a Blacklaw. Art thou certain, Mycroft, that thou appliest thine own formula correctly? Here thou describest silks and embroidery, curls and ribbons, pleats and skirting, and apply he. I know the name Dominic Seneschal. And know, too, there are breasts beneath that taut waistcoat, that the thigh and pelvis which the coat's high cut displays are very much a woman's. If thou must have thy fetishizing pronouns, shouldst thou not write she when she is so garishly proclaimed? Innocent reader, I take comfort in your confusion, for it is a sign of healthy days if you are illiterate in the signal flags of segregation humanity has worked so hard to leave behind. In certain centuries, these high, tight boots, these pleats and ponytail, might indeed have coded female. But I warned you, reader, that it was the 18th century which forced this change upon us, and here it stands before you. You saw already Princess Danae, with the costume of Edo period Japan, and its comportment too. Modest, coquettish, fragile, and proficient at making the stronger sex risk death for her. Can you not recognize the male of that species? Though French this time, rather than Japanese. Perhaps you argue that a gentle man of that enlightened age is effeminate. His curls and silks, his poetry and dances, and you are right if we apply the standards of a Goth or other proud barbarian. But would you then oblige me to call all such gentlemen she? The patriarch? George Washington? Rousseau? De Sade? Shall I call the divine marquis she? No, good master. To understand what follows, you must anchor yourself in this truth, that, by the standards of the era which sculpted him from childhood, the woman Dominic Seneschal is the boldest and most masculine of men. Unfortunately, knocking instead of ringing was the signal kids from the Science Museum used when they came to visit Cato Weeksbooth. He answered eagerly, only to find instead this monster out of time, fierce-eyed, inexplicable, with a black law sash ominous around his hips and a black sensei's scarf draped around his shoulders like a snake's old skin. Poor Cato, who could not face even Cousin Foster, gentlest of sensei's. Our Cato screams and runs. Cato, what on earth? A woman's voice called down the stairs, accompanied by fast descending feet. Did you start another fire? Cato gave no answer but the slam and lock click of his lab door. I confess that some of the dialogue in this chapter is invented, reader, for I did not see this scene, and have only incomplete testimony, but I know both of them well enough to impersonate. Quel instinct superbe! Dominique muttered in French to himself. What? Your bashmate is perceptive, if cowardly. Dominique smiled, though on his mask-smooth face all smiles feel cold. I'll let myself in, shall I? It was Leslie who intercepted the intruder in the entrance hall. What are you supposed to be? He swept off his tricorn as he bowed. I am Dominique Seneschal. I was dispatched by Tribune J.E.D.D. Mason to investigate your break-in. Did Martin Gilbreaker not warn you I would inevitably follow? Leslie frowned distress, though anyone would frown distress if a Dominic followed a Martin into your home. I got a notice someone would be coming. She checked the credentials in her tracker, and the security systems confirmed. Robots retreating meekly before Romanova's tribunary codes. I would have appreciated knowing when. I wonder whose oversight that was, he smiled. No need to take pains. You may go back to work. I shall sniff about the house first. I can interrogate Bash members later. Dominic has an accent, stronger than any you have likely heard. Not a strat marker tinting vowel shape, but genuinely struggling with short I's, initial H's, and the TH on his Z. Lifelong stumbling blocks for one who did not learn English in his first years. Of course, I recognize the famous Leslie Juniper sniper sanir. Dominic knew Leslie, as we all did, from the broadcast 17 years earlier. A plump-cheeked little angel 11 years of age with tear-bright eyes, rosy cheeks, and a largely Chinese face, but enough African ancestry in the mix to shape her black hair into a halo of corkscrew curls. In the film footage, Leslie stands before a row of solemn adults with Occam on her right, as confident at 13 as at 30, and on her left, the elusive Ojiro cardigan sniper, half shrouded by a hooded wrap, whom you will not find in any other Bash picture, no matter how hard you hunt. Together, they tell the press that the five other members of Leslie's tiny Bash, three Bapas and two Basibs, have been killed simultaneously, as their two independent cars hit one another at a likelihood of some 14 trillion to one. As the eldest of the Sanir Weeksbooth children, Occam and Ojiro volunteered to break the news to the orphan, and with that resilient purity only children possess, the three kids have conceived a plan. Leslie will be adopted by the Bash responsible for the tragedy, and together with her new Bashmates, she will dedicate herself to running and improving the system whose failures are so few and yet so fatal. Maybe it may be the safest way to travel ever, she declares in her childlike ineloquence. But everything good can get even better if you try. Watching the little power trio side by side, you can see they bonded instantly. And you can see, too, why, when the Sanir Weeksbooth elders watched the scene, they understood at once that when childhood ended, Leslie's choice of which of these two princes of the Bash to take as spouse would break the tie and determine the new master of the house. Leslie, née Juniper, adopted sniper, wedded Sanir, is today the living image of her childhood self, just as bright, round-cheeked, and energetic, and her clothing just as matted with the doodles which, then as now, flow from her like babble from a man possessed. Yes, I'm Leslie Sinier. Leslie planted her feet to block the corridor, her stone-solid aggression exaggerated by her heavy humanist boots, screen cloth so she can load a different doodle every day. She gasped as quick as a thief. The Blacklaw raised her hand and kissed it. Mon plaisir, Madame Seigneur. This way, I think. Grasping her waist like a dancing partner, Dominic vaulted past Leslie with a practiced leap and trotted on down the corridor. Martin's scans don't do justice to the tension of the room, the hum, exhilarating. Wait, she chased him. I still have to verify your clearance personally. He flexed his shoulders, basking in the window's slant of sun. You're welcome to call His Grace President Ganymede if you want a personal reference. Leslie testifies that given the speed of Dominic's speech and the thickness of his accent, it took her some time to realize he was using he and she. You know the president? Intimately. Have you any enemies? The question made her frown. Are you a sensei or a polylaw? Both, he pronounced with relish. I serve at the pleasure of Jed Mason. That he pronounced with greater relish, though for her sake he contracted it Jed Mason, as so many do. No enemies? I'll ask again later. Now, is there any part of the house which it would be inconvenient for me to search first? She planted herself in front of him. Slow down, Blacklaw. I'm the officer in charge right now. In charge of keeping the lifeblood of the world speeding on its course, I understand. He gave a nod, almost a bow, to Mukta. That eased Leslie's frown a notch. Indeed. And I keep the peace among the gods. I believe we are both officers in charge. At this point, Leslie strongly considered exercising her legal right to kick an obnoxious Blacklaw in the there-were-no-nuts stomach. It was a reasonable impulse. The Blacklaw sash around this visitor's waist proclaims his choice to renounce all protections of the law, Hive Laws and Romanova's neutral grey laws, and to face the earth with no protection but his own strength, and the restrictions others' laws may place upon their use of force. A Mitsubishi or strict cousin may not, by their own chosen laws, indulge in fists and brawling, but humanist law accommodates those who sometimes wish to settle things with fists. Leslie was considering her aim when her eye caught the line of the dueling rapier almost hidden in the pleating of the Blacklaw's coat. Dominic smiled as he saw her dark eyes catch upon the sword, and he caressed its black hilt. When I catch the perpetrator, you can petition to have them tried under humanist law, but Black Sakura has already recommended a Romanovan panel. I would go with that if I were you. Their penalties tend to sting much more than yours. Shall I begin downstairs? Leslie shook herself to fight off the surreality of it all. What do you mean you keep the peace among the gods? Dominic gave a deeper smile, with a soft sound, almost like a purr, deep in his throat. I mean that when the 710 lists are printed, there will be no name in top seven whose house and office I do not frequent. I mean that your president, Ganymede, is quick to call me when a crisis needs decloying, and all other hive leaders do the same. I mean that I am how these sensitive matters are settled. Are always settled, and I shall settle this one. Martin is the partner of my labors, but he's too gentle to impress on people what it is we really do. We keep the peace among those gods who govern those of you who choose to have a government. Again, he grasped her like a dancing partner, caressing the small of her back and using her weight for his own spin as he bounded toward the steps, lithe as a show horse. I'll start downstairs, shall I? Out of your way? Leslie charged after him. Hold on. I need to know exactly what you'll be doing, step by step. He paused on the top landing. The carpet is torn on this stair. You should have that seen to. Someone could trip and fall. What will you be doing? Imaging? Scanning? Viewing files? Sniffing about, I told you. I'm here for the smell and taste of things. Have you any enemies? No, Leslie answered instantly, then paused. You asked me that before. What do you mean? Anyone who would like to see your lives disrupted for personal reasons, rather than the obvious financial and political ones. A jilted lover? Family of a crash victim who blames you? A hobby competitor, perhaps? Sport? Someone the famous sniper keeps defeating? Sane questions calmed her. Not that I can think of. No one has been particularly upset by any crashes in the last few years. He darted back up toward her, testing a vent with his fingertip, and, in the same motion, trapped her between his body and the wall. No old rivals? No one wronged in an affair? Leslie's eyes went wide, the change exaggerated by their Chinese contours. But something kept her from shoving him back. No. Dominic leaned even closer, caressing the grating above Leslie's head, his chest not quite brushing hers. Your spouse is work-obsessed, he smiled, tasting her breath and letting her taste his. Have you other affairs? Blush bloomed on Leslie's cheeks. Is it a sin in your morality, reader, for a married person to admire the body of a stranger? Is she less entitled to recognize the beauty of firm buttocks or the motions of a practiced hand? And if you do consider it a sin, then am I right that this scene, virile Dominique with Leslie's small frame pressed against his, breast to breast, is more exciting for you because it is forbidden? Confess, reader. Something in you hungers for transgression here. Show me, Mycroft. Strip that antique costume from the flesh beneath. Show me whether this she-man wears a strap-on. And, if so, have him use it. This woman, Leslie, doomed from childhood to be the prize for rivals Occam and Ogiero, let her revenge herself on them by cuckolding the victor here. Let them do it against the wall, or upstairs with Mukta looking on. And, for contrast, throw in limp Eureka and Sydney lounging in the background, blind in their permanent masturbation with the computer. It was in your mind, reader, was it not? Complete with my he's and she's, which have infected you by now. But feel no guilt. It was in Leslie's mind as well, placed there by Dominic, who can summon more of the heat of pornography with a single gesture than I could with 1,000 words. Like Princess Danae, reader, he trains. I have no time, Mycroft, for these thine interruptions, thy speculations, thy patriarch, thy Hobbes. My fantasy is not thy business. Give me truth. What did they do? Leslie pressed herself back against the wall, gaining an inch of breathing room. As a matter of fact, I haven't. Dominic's eyes did not believe. This is an open bash, yes? How many of your unmarried Barsibs date outside the bash? Any angry ex-lovers? Leslie is herself uncomfortable with the fact that her very sensible impulse to kick this black law in the nuts did not recur. Cato's not interested. But Thisbe has some angry exes, yes, and the twins might too. It's hard to track what the twins get up to, but they're always dating at least two people between them, usually more. I see. Dominic shifted his stance, just brushing the side of her thigh with his half-hidden scabbard. And are there rivalries within the Sunnier Weeksbooth bash? He asked. Everyone's content with who does what work, who takes what shifts, who sleeps with whom? Everyone's content. Occam and I monitor it all very carefully. His smile widened as he leaned close enough to savor her shampoo. All nine of you get along perfectly all the time, like little angels. Perhaps one as strong as Leslie did not tremble. Boshmates squabble. It's healthy. I said we monitor it carefully. He retreated a few inches, testing whether her flesh would follow his. You and Monsieur Sidney Coons are exceptions. But the other seven were all born in this bash, yes? Seven children, and none of them wanted to go form a new bash with campus friends like a normal 20-something? That's very unusual. Her flesh did follow his, though possibly just to ease away from the wall. We like our work. And who's the weakest link in your bash? His fingers brushed the soft underside of her forearm. If I were a criminal, whom would I want to grab and torture? Who would break first? The touch of skin on skin was too much, broke the spell somehow, and Leslie scowled, pressing him away. I thought you said you were going to look at the house before you asked us questions.
That I did, madame. My apologies.
Dominic darted back at once, down the steps quick as a dragonfly. I'll start down here, shall I? He threw wide the door of Thisbe's room before Leslie could reply. There's someone in here, madame. Did you know that? Not one of your bash. What? Dominic grasped his sword hilt as he filled the doorway. Explain yourself. I'm waiting for Thisbe, came a timid voice from below. I'm their sensei. It was Carlyle, reader. Mercifully, it was Carlyle. Back again with a fresh round of questions. But it could as easily have been the child. Right, Leslie cried. I'd forgotten they were back again. Sensei? Dominic repeated. Yes, can I help you? Carlyle approached, his pale face beaming energy, for he had risen full of strength that day, since March the 24th was the feast of the Norse god Heimdall, a day on which men had honored their creators in ages past and still do today. Dominic read Carlyle's body as a butcher scans the contours of a pig.
You're a sensei.
You too, I see. Carlyle nodded to the scarf on Dominic's shoulders. Are you a set-set specialist? Eureka Weeksbooth was hoping for one. Dominic stared, eyes marking the contours of Carlyle's face, the sharp blue of his eyes.
What's your name, cousine?
He pronounced cousin like the French feminine. Carlyle Foster?
Carlyle Foster.
Yes. Is something wrong? How old are you? Carlyle is, like Dominic and Leslie, in that medically extended stretch of youth that makes it impossible to distinguish 18 from 38. 28? Why do you ask?
And you're a sensei?
Yes. The gag gene dug his fingers into his wrap, patterned today with abstract elephants in white on blue. Is something wrong? Dominic's laugh is complex. It begins with silence, a stare which drags out for a few seconds before the first breath comes, almost a hiccup. Then more silence before the next, staccato gasps closer and closer until finally the voice and bitter smile arrive together as Dominic throws his head back into a climactic, thirsty gasp. Carlyle shivered when he described the experience to me, and compared it to how he imagines John Calvin might have laughed as he witnessed some atrocity, smug at finding proof that this fallen world was truly as despicable as his sermons taught. Carlyle tried, he said, to ask what was so funny, whether he had done something wrong, but the horror of the laugh kept killing his words before they could take wing. In the end, Dominic answered only with the merciful command,
"Get out."
What?
Get out of this room. You're distracting me from my investigation, Carlyle Foster.
He laughed again, as if the name revealed some new double entendre on second hearing.
Get out before I change my mind. You can wait for your Thisbe upstairs.
Carlyle was quickly herded out into the stairwell and almost tumbled into Leslie as Dominic sealed Thisbe's door behind him. To my knowledge, not even Martin has ever witnessed Dominic searching a room, so powerful is his preference for solitude. How does he work? By simple sight and touch, A concealed machine? By scent, perhaps? The insanity of his devotion driving his mind to develop that sense which feels most right for such a creature? Can you imagine him, reader, on his knees, boot leather creaking as he sniffs the carpet centimeter by centimeter? He answers happily enough to Canis Domini, Hound of the Lord, the old pun on Dominicani, the Dominican monks who hunted truth and heresy in heaven's name and that of their great founder. Whatever Dominic's technique, it misses nothing. Not a hair, not a stain, not the handprint of a 5-centimeter soldier on the barrel of a marker I forgot to wipe. "Who was that?" Carlyle asked outside, still staring at the door. "Dominic S. something." Leslie was still short of breath, but she turned a smile on Carlyle as the two found themselves united by mutual bewilderment. "Is it just me, or is that the weirdest person you've ever met?" "I'm something of a specialist, so I meet some odd people, but that was certainly in the top 10 for weird." She chuckled as she offered him a hand. "We haven't met. I'm Leslie Sanier." He matched her smile. "Nice to meet you, Member Sanier. Leslie, please." "Leslie," Carlyle repeated. I think I remember hearing about a black law sensei called Dominic. You don't forget a name like that." "What did you hear about them?" "Not much. I think they were well thought of by the conclave." She stared. "Why?" "I could ask." "Please do." "Of course." He started composing a message through his tracker. Leslie, too, shut off quick messages to Occam, Martin, 2 security captains, and her president's office to make sure this improbable creature really was dispatched by Romanova. All would answer yes. "I don't know whether it would feel normal for another black law, but I don't want someone like that as my sensei. My guess is they're a gadfly specialist. Some senseis practice a special aggressive style, so you can do a one-time session with them if you really want to be pushed to the core, and then you and your usual sensei work on the new questions it raises. The black law mystique would certainly work to enhance the feeling of danger." Leslie, who had tasted more deeply of Dominic's aggressive style, frowned. Carlyle mustered his most energetic smile. "Speaking of returning to your usual sensei, would you like to talk about whether or not there's some kind of divinity or divine force in the universe?" Leslie laughed a warm and healthy laugh, healing for both of them. "Sure, why not? We're supposed to have a session soon anyway. We can get it over with. Good way to pass the time while we wait for that creature to get out of my house." Her feet strayed kitchenward. "Come have some figs." One of the twins was on a crazy fig kick when they programmed the tree last month, so we've got a zillion more than we'll ever eat. Together, armed with kitchen warmth and metaphysics, the two spent a good hour erasing the after-chill of their encounter. They did not see Dominic again, they said, nor did the others in the Bash. He might have searched just Thisbe's room, or he might have passed through the whole house, silent as a plague. Either way, he vanished without another question.